Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, and thank you for listening to the Wise Women Media Radio Show. And I want to thank everybody who's listening in right now. And I also want to thank our sponsors, which are Roundtree 7, Here Be Monsters, Daughters of Isis, The Hoodooed Blog, Power New Media and Public Relations, Tarot and Stars, Florida Nature Photos. And I want to remind everybody you can see us online at wisewomenmedia.posteris.com at our blog, and hit us up on the WePay link, which is at the top of the page underneath our sponsors, and donate a little bit to help us keep going every week. Linda, is that you on the line with me?
Yes, it is, Nina. How are you this evening?
Hi, thank you for being with us, and thanks for taking your personal time out to explain to us a little bit about what you know about what's happening at Bayou Corn in the Assumption Parish in Louisiana. I've been scanning through the articles, and it looks like things are rapidly changing there. Can you give us a little heads up on what you know so far?
Well, it's a very dynamic and dangerous and fluid situation, and there are many folks that are monitoring this at the state level, locally in the Assumption Parish area, which is in Louisiana. And we've got basically a salt dome, which has had some mechanical integrity issues, and there's been a breach in a cavern within a very large salt dome, which actually sits below the community of Bayou Corn in Louisiana, which is very near Pierre Part and also near Grand Bayou. And so essentially there was a breach in this particular cavern. There's many caverns in the stone. You know, think of it as a bunch of walled off caverns. They used to mine and brine salt. So essentially one of these caverns started to collapse, and then we had a sinkhole appear. And it's become quite large, actually. And there's a diesel blanket that covers this dome. So the sinkhole is actually covered in diesel oil, and that is now coming up through the sinkhole. And for the last 2.5 months, folks have been smelling this really strong, powerful smell of diesel. And additionally, the diesel blanket that, you know, sits atop that is releasing large quantities of chemicals into the air. So there are many residents who've been evacuated, but many who haven't been evacuated, Anita, and they're being made very sick by this diesel being released in the air. So there's also a lot of bubbling of methane, and that is coming up through the shallow aquifers that we have there near Bayou Corn and up through Bayou Corn. So we've had 33 bubbling locations. This isn't like your typical, you know, gas where there's an aroma to it that you'd smell in a pipeline. There is no aroma to it. So essentially, they drilled a well into the cavern to go see what was going on. And the company that, you know, has this cavern is leased. It is called Texas Brine. And they did a secondary well into the cavern. And so it's everybody has been sort of on pins and needles. You know, it's been a touch-and-go situation, you know, with regard to the sinkhole. And then there are also... It gets very complicated because there's also 6 other petrochemical companies who do store things in the dome and other caverns within the dome. And they are now been ordered by the Department of Natural Resources, the DNR, Louisiana DNR, to vent those, all of those different caverns that they have gas storage in, to relieve any pressures within the overall dome itself. So it's a very, very fluid situation. And by and large, the community over the past 3 to 4 weeks has been very upset. And it is only just recently, I would say in the last week, that the officials have really started to communicate in an open and transparent manner with everybody in the community.
I think we have John O'Shea on the line. Is that you, John?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, thank you for coming on with us. I'm going to have... Linda, tell us a little bit about how she got involved with this and how you guys kind of combined forces to work with the community. So, Linda, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in this, and then how John and you tied in together to do the work that you're doing down there.
Sure. Well, John probably knows me from the Gulf Coast Environmental and Health Coalition, and we did a lot of work right after the BP disaster throughout the Gulf Coast communities. And many communities were hit hard in the coastal areas who were experiencing, you know, pollution and health issues. And I'm from Louisiana as well, and I have family in Cajun country, and my family goes back over about 160 years in the Acadiana area. So it's my home place, you know. But in any event, we hooked up because anytime there's any lives, you know, anytime anybody's lives are going to be ripped apart and their communities are going to be shaken like they have been with BP and that disaster, we're seeing sort of like the same things happening, you know, at Bayou Cornegan. And it's just large corporations coming in and then smaller communities that have been really disruptive. And that's a very powerful disruptive thing. And John is an unbelievable activist in his own right because he really does have, you know, the thoughts of everyone in this community. And so we sort of hooked up, you know, just in terms of like-mindedness and what we could do and collaborate to get more people aware of what's going on, you know, in Bayou Corn.
So, John, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in the beginning and what are the immediate needs of these communities right now is probably what we need to know about before we go on to exactly what's happening and how the leadership has responded. We definitely want to get to that during this program.
Yes, I'm born and raised in Assumption Parish in Napoleonville, which is probably about 15 miles from Bayou Corn. I have about 750 acres of family land and a camp in Bayou Corn area. You fished and hunt, you know, as a kid. You know, we grew up, we spent a lot of time at the camp, you know, in Bayou Corn. I got involved probably a month, or a little less than a month into it once the bubbling had started. It's been a long road. It's been a long 3 months.
It's been a very long 3 months.
Yeah.
Most all of us, and by the way, Anita, grow up in the bayous of Louisiana. My papa, we spent many, all of us grow up in camps. We fish, we hunt, and like the fishermen, too, in Louisiana, we really are stewards of the environment. You know, we really care about our bayou country. You know, we love it. I mean, it's in our blood.
Right.
So the biggest one of the, well, you know, there's so many needs, but for me, one of the, what I think is the biggest need is for it to be covered nationally. You know, it seems to be a local thing. You know, the media got involved when the sinkhole happened, you know, and it's kind of, you know, petered out a bit, and the media just seems to get involved when something, you know, something happens. But they don't cover it, you know, all the time. And the national media, CNN came down one time, and NBC came down once. But that was it. You know, you don't hear anything else about it nationally.
I just often feel that the people of Louisiana are kind of on the chopping block in regards to environmental issues of all sorts, of every single thing that you all have been hit with. It's like the media covers, either they don't cover at all, they cover very little, or they don't even give you the right kind of coverage, like during Hurricane Katrina. It seemed like it was all, you know, media manipulated and everything. It was manipulated and they told the story instead of the people telling the story that were experiencing the hardships. So
yeah.
this is a big thing. With Louisiana is the fact that our leadership and the leadership of Louisiana is pretty much sold out to the gas and oil companies, and they own your state. And now what happens? You know what I'm saying? It's like, where do you go from here?
Right. Well,
good question,
It's a very heavy question, and the reality is that the state does – employ, you know, over 250,000 people are in this industry. You know, it's a world economy. I mean, we could be sitting around a family table, you know, and folks could have fishermen and shrimpmen and folks who, you know, spent summers on the oil rigs or any part of the pipeline in, you know, in the oil and gas industry. So Louisiana, by and large, yes, the largest industry in the state, you know, is oil and gas and petrochemical. You know, my feeling and my belief is that they can coexist side by side as long as we have the, you know, the community relations is really where it needs to be in the focus on safety, especially as it, you know, as it relates to the community surrounding a lot of the refineries or a lot of the folks that work on the rigs. So, you know, it's a delicate balance, and we've seen the balance being tipped way over to the other side. I mean, Louisiana has been long been a place of environmental injustices and communities, you know, with regard to pollution. So, you know, you're right, the state is, this is nothing new to the state. However, we really do believe that, you know, people come first, you know, here in Louisiana. And that's something that we really want to try to communicate to these corporations as they come down and work and establish, you know, operations in the state, that we're not, you know, we're not expendable. You know, we work hard. We love our land. We love our bayous. You know, we love our state, and we want to keep it non-polluted, and we want to have a safe environment. You know.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of.
So I think the fact that they can, you know, the companies themselves can just operate with impunity. I mean, there's certain guidelines that they have to go by, but they don't follow those guidelines. And then the other issue is the fact that your leadership has, you know, they take campaign contributions from the oil and gas industry. So, you know, they will always act in favor of the oil and gas companies that actually get them into office or help get them into office. So, you know, where do they draw the line? Where because right now the companies are acting with impunity. They know that if they get fined, it's a small amount. They get that's the cost of doing business, and that's where it's at right now. Very sad to say, but true. What do the people if you had to run a program on NBC or ABC or CBS evening news, what are the main points of what's happening there? Would you want to get out to the rest of the people in this country? And either of you can answer. That's fine.
I'm going to defer to John. He's on the front lines right now. So
yeah, well, you know, the biggest problem, one of the biggest problems that I see is, You kind of talked about oversight and regulation. DNR and Office of Conservation don't seem to have any handle whatsoever on these companies. These companies, like you said, seem to just do what they want. You know, like just we were talking about caverns, okay? They are required every 5 years to do a mechanical integrity test. So, and I don't know if there's any reporting whatsoever each year. So basically these companies self-regulate themselves for 5 years at a time. It's just ridiculous that, you know, in when you talked about expendable, there was the community next to buy corn was Grand Bayou. In 2003-2004, a similar, you know, incident happened. The whole community was just wiped out. It's not even there anymore. You know, this time you hear a lot of the people saying, you know, it's time for the companies to go this time, not the people.
I like that.
Yeah.
So how did you all get together and start working with the community, with the people themselves? How did that come about?
Well, for me personally, it happened by coincidence. Actually, I'm just reading through Facebook and, you know, seeing the people talking about bubbling and no media, no agencies or anybody involved. And, you know, I felt like, you know, I could get, you know, the media and the agencies involved. I went there the next day, went right out, looked at the bubbles, took pictures. By that evening, it was on one of the local news channels, and I've just been at it ever since. That was 3 months ago.
And John,
they
really
were talking
really
today
in the throes of it.
Yeah, today they were saying something about the water going around, and it's actually the water's going in a circular motion, and some of the sides are caving in, and I cannot recall where I read that. It might have been the report about Sandia or something like that. Have you all seen that report? It came out today.
I haven't seen it.
No, I have not seen the Sandia Labs. I do know that the scientific working group had said that they were consulting with the Sandia Labs because of the experience that Sandia has had with the structural integrity of salt domes with the strategic petroleum reserves. So, and they've consulted with the USGS, and the USGS, Dr. Horton from Memphis is down here, and he's triangulated and put a lot of instrumentation around the dome area itself to monitor any of the seismology of the dome, and has indicated that the seismic readings that they're getting is from the dome, you know, collapsing. Not the dome, but the cavern within the dome, the Texas Brine Cavern, was collapsing, causing the seismic activity. So that was how Sandia was. But no, I haven't seen a report, a specific report that you're talking about, unless it's been vetted through the scientific working.
I found it on Facebook. It was the title of the article. It's from GSNmagazine.com. It just came out today. I posted it on my page and I couldn't find it until just now, but the title of it is Louisiana Sinkhole, Officials Turn to Sandia National Labs for Help on Huge Sinkhole. Now, wherever I got this link from, someone, and I can't remember, put a comment.
Well, that was the USGS is involved at that level, and I believe they had called the Sandia Labs, and John and I both feel pretty strongly that we need to have a larger national presence with this, because we don't believe you can have a real myopic view on this. You can't just have, you know, a petroleum engineer or a chemical engineer a myopic point. It has to be a full court, you know, scientific press. You need to have physicists, geophysicists, geohazards analysis, soils experts, geologists on top of risk analysis. And those who really understand, you know, the pressurizations that are going on in the cavern. So our concern is that maybe a smaller scientific working group at the state level may not have the resources that the federal government does. So I think Sandia Lab being involved is a good thing.
Yeah, but somebody had put a comment underneath that said, growing Louisiana sinkhole, debris now moving towards center. Walls collapsing in clockwise path. I can't for the life. Now, this wasn't the article. This was someone had left a comment stating that. And I thought, I'm not sure where they're getting the information, but if that's happening today, that's pretty frightening, because that's saying that it is collapsing underneath and everything is moving into that inside area because of the displacement. So That really kind of scared me when I read it.
Yes.
Have you been to the site itself? And I'm asking you, John, because you live locally there. Have you actually gone and taken a look, and what did you see?
Yeah, actually, I went to the sinkhole the day after it formed. It formed on Friday, August 3rd. I went out in an airboat Saturday, August 4th. On top, in the middle of the sinkhole. It was a weird feeling. You know, that just 100-foot trees, you know, that were there were just gone. We saw a few. They had a few trees. You could see, maybe 10 or 15 foot at the top of it, just bobbing up and down. You know.
Oh my. And what about
very,
the animals in the region? Has anybody been looking at? That whole situation, have the animals actually left, or is anybody testing them, or what's happening with that? Because I know scientists can get a lot of information by watching just the wildlife habitats and the ecosystems of the area.
Yeah, Linda may know more about it. I know wildlife and fisheries out there, but I don't know what their primary purpose is. I know they keep telling us with 30, you know, different bubble spots coming up in bayous that it's still safe. You know, they're still letting people fish. I disagree with the water being safe, but
I disagree as well. I mean, we can't have 33 bubbling locations with gas coming up and a sinkhole that keeps caving in. When they're using terminology like that, it's sloughing as opposed to really what it's doing is caving in. And the last, I'm not sure, do you have the most recent situation report, John, at your disposal to talk about how large, we get conflicting reports, you know, every day in terms of how large that sinkhole really is as well.
Yeah, well, the overall dimensions of, right now are about 500, it's about 500 feet diameter. The geologists, they say they expect it to grow to 1,400 feet in diameter. So the cave-ins that are happening are not unexpected, but they, I mean, they make you cringe, you know, every time you hear it. And Linda's right, you do get conflicting reports. You know, Texas Brine is the one that are actually reporting the measurements as far as what they're saying is caving in. I disagree with that as well. Texas Brine should not be, you know, the ones reporting, you know, their own cave-in. I mean, they're facing large lawsuits. How can we trust them to give us correct measurements on what's caving in and what's not?
Well, John, for Anita's listeners, can you kind of describe how far that is away from homes and property?
Yeah, the closest from the edge of the sinkhole, the closest home is about right a little bit under 2,000 feet. I think it's 1,950 feet is the closest home.
Oh, wow.
Sinkhole, and yeah, it's fairly close. Now, from the Texas Brine Cavern to the sinkhole is only 200 foot. That cavern's volume is 20 million barrels.
Wow. I think my concern after hearing all this and how dangerous this is for local communities, how does one even buy a home anywhere and not know if something like that is under their home? I mean, I'm sure that there's these types of caverns other places and other locations within the United States. Are they usually associated with fracking, or are these completely different things, you know, that local populations might not even know about? What do you say to that?
The dome itself, you know, fracking really doesn't have anything to do with the dome, because the dome is just about 50 caverns that are used, you know, to store gas. And I think Dow has operations on the dome as well, you know, for mining brine. And then they also, you know, have large gas, because it's a very, you know, Louisiana is a gas center. You know, it's a hub for natural gas. However, there's a larger concern, Anita, and I think I mentioned to you offline earlier, is that Louisiana has had, by and large, a lot of things stored in those domes and across that dot, you know, across the southeast Louisiana. And in particular in this dome, we've done some research and have seen that in that particular cavern, there was a company called Hooker Chemical that was the original lessee of the cavern in question right now. We have no idea what was stored, you know, just as non-specified product. And that's a concern. And I think that openness and transparency, and I've talked to many folks, you know, in the community, the hazmat community, and there were lots of chemicals, lots of solid waste disposal and issues prior to the 80s and the 70s and the 60s that were prior to the EPA regs. So some of these chemicals and things were grandfathered in, you know, before John and I were born, you know. And we really don't know what was, you know, stored or has been plugged and abandoned in some of these caverns in the domes. And to the regulations, I really don't think anything should be plugged and abandoned in any well without any environmental, you know, report being done in terms of what's been stored down in the brine. And the second point to that is that these are old caverns. I mean, these were built in the 60s, and there's cement infrastructure down there. I remember my dad went down in one of them with a hard hat and, you know, took the elevators down. I guess this was the Jefferson Dome. And they're huge, huge cavernous things, you know, below the earth. And they're natural soft formations, and they tend to shift. So putting these really highly pressurized gases, it's probably not what they were designed for in the first place. And to that point, after 50 years of, you know, you can have water intrusion and all these pressurized gases coming in and out of caverns. So subsurface mining and storage of this type of these types of products that the petrochemical companies are putting in there may not be the best choice to store in those caverns. And that's why I think we need better regulations so things like this won't happen again. And that 30 years from now, our grandchildren aren't, you know, stuck with our stupid decision.
It seems like if they've got one, you know, in Assumption Parish, there's got to be other locations. And people need to know that if they're living, if they have property over these things or property near these things, they're really in a very precarious situation. So I would say if anybody's listening to this show and you don't know what's in your own backyard, that's pretty scary. I tend to think that the same way that you do. If there isn't any regulation, even enough regulation to state what was stored in the old ones before they were plugged and abandoned, then, you know, they shouldn't be operational. Because what's going into the groundwater? That's the next question. What's going into the aquifers and the groundwater and the watersheds and into people's
wells?
Well,
they're hydrocarbons. They're hydrocarbons right now in the aquifer, in the shallow aquifer, which is the Mississippi alluvial aquifer. So we do have issues. And there are six other companies that will have to be venting. And then the Shaw Group has been called in to help assist in terms of that oversight into the venting procedures to clean up the aquifers. We have no idea how long that will take. John, you want to add to that?
Well, the aquifer, we've been on DNR for over 2 months now about venting the aquifer. I have no idea what has taken so long. You know, I've talked to former industry workers on that particular dome itself from the beginning. You know, 3 months ago they were talking about vent the aquifer, vent the aquifer. Every meeting we have. You know, DNR, vent the aquifer, vent the, you know, I can't say it enough. they just can't seem to get, and then DNR finally decides, okay, we're gonna put a rig, a test rig, you know, to go into the aquifer and vent it. They know they're going to hit gas under pressure. They use a rig that can't handle hitting gas pressure. I was like, how incompetent is DNR, you know, to use a rig that can't handle gas pressure when they know they're going to hit the gas pressure. You know, so then that helped. They halted that, and that's when they made the order to the other six companies that Linda had mentioned. But it's just, you know, we deal with those kind of things. You know, just how incompetent can DNR be to use a rig
really,
that can't handle
it? It's a little deeper than that. I mean, how deep is this rabbit hole? I mean, DNR was also the regulatory state agency that allowed Texas brine to put naturally occurring radioactive material, NORM, in that particular cavern and allowed, they green-lighted that to Texas brine in the 90s. And there's still a question as to whether there were state statutes on the books that I believe they prohibited any type of radioactive material being stored subsurfacely. So we really do have, I believe we've got, you know, we can't have the fox guarding the hen house on this one. We really do need to have some serious oversight.
Wow. Well, the thing that you all were discussing that, John, you had mentioned about the stats on all of this being done by Texas brine reminds me so much of the BP oil spill, because during the BP oil spill, I don't like to call it a spill, I like to call it a geyser or a gusher. BP was the one, BP and the Coast Guard were providing the data for that. And what really disturbed me as a veteran myself is what the hell is a military organization such as the Coast Guard doing providing security for a company or a series of companies? I had a real issue with that. Because that's certainly not what I served for, and I'm sure that many veterans feel the same way I do.
Well, first off, thank you for your service to our country. I really want to thank you for that. You bring up a really good point, Anita, and that is, our servicemen are out there, and the Coast Guard especially, to serve and protect us and our coastline. At the very beginning, I do believe there was, a lot of collusion going on. However, as you started to watch this, you could start seeing that they started to separate paths. And we're seeing the same thing happen here at Bayou Corn, where the officials were all very, parroting and sort of regurgitating everything that Texas Brian was saying. And then just in the last week, they've started to separate paths and go in different directions. And that sort of happens, the natural evolution of crises like this, where corporations, the lawyers get a hold of them, and they don't want to vet everything through the officials, and they're so afraid of lessening their liability, like BP did. So we have Texas Brine now saying that they believe that it was an act of God and a natural disaster, and that the caverns are collapsing because of some, seismic activity, when that's been, publicly documented that there was problems with the cavern, prior to, and that they're conflicting with the USGS, who's now claiming that the caverns were collapsing. So, we're starting to get all this really conflicting data, and now Texas Brian's taking off seeing their own things, and they're not vetting them through the emergency parish officials. So where does that leave the community? I mean, they don't know who to believe at this point.
To extend on that, just to give you a little bit about exactly what happened, Texas, because we have real trust issues with Department of Natural Resources as well as Office of Conservation. January 21st, 2011, Texas Brine President Mark Cartwright sends a letter to Office of Conservation, Joe Ball. He's the Injection and Mining Director for Office of Conservation, DNR. Now, in the letter, Texas Brine states that their cavern failed a mechanical integrity test. And so it seems after, conservation or DNR, whoever the terms, I have no idea how that works, but they allowed them to plug and abandon the cavern that they knew had failed an integrity test. Now, when this all started, May 30th, the bubble started. DNR got involved and conservation got involved about June 28th or so. Joe Ball, the guy, did letter correspondence between him and Texas Brine the whole time with our parish officials. He never disclosed the problems with this cavern. The sinkhole happened on August 3rd. he had meetings with them for the next few days. He still never disclosed the problems with the Texas Brine Cavern. The only way it was exposed was, I believe it was August 8th, in a newspaper, the Advocate in Baton Rouge. The reporter went to the Office of Conservation and dug up those records. Now, Mr. Joe Ball, we haven't seen him since. He's supposed to be the expert, on caverns, as far as injection and mining, and he's nowhere to be found since that's happened. So I suggest one or two things happen. He either needs to get back involved, if he's the expert, and answer our questions, or, I've asked that he resign. I think he should resign. I mean, I think the taxpayers are paying his salary for nothing. They have him off hiding somewhere off in an office right now.
That certainly isn't leadership, and it's not anybody. I mean, nobody wants to take any responsibility, and definitely no accountability.
Accountability.
Right. Can either of you speak on the seismic activity? Is that continuing, or has that abated somewhat?
The seismic activity, Linda may know a little more about it, but the seismic activity started, the earliest report was June 8th, okay, and the seismic activity continued until the day before, or exactly when, the sinkhole happened, which was August 3rd. They stopped for a while here recently. Over the last couple of weeks, the seismic activity has started to increase again. Dr. Horton suggested in the same newspaper I mentioned earlier, because there's more, you know, gas bubbling spots popping out. They're actually as far as 4 miles away from the sinkhole. But he mentioned that it could possibly be a cycle repeating itself, meaning more bubbles, more tremors, and I guess, you know, possibility of another sinkhole happening.
Could the question that we have from the chat room, Josh has asked this question. He's saying, I've been wondering if seismic activity could be a precursor to a major quake. I mean, that's a good question. I mean, could that happen?
It's a very good question. You know, most folks don't even know. We do have fault lines, you know, that dot and crisscross Louisiana. There's one that actually goes right smack through Baton Rouge. And then in the 30s, there was a seismic activity in Napoleonville, which was the largest earthquake on record.
Yeah, there's a fault line that runs along the Napoleonville Dome, the dome that we're talking about. Now, if it's
really
possible or not for a major earthquake to happen, I mean, from what USGS is telling us is no. They think the tremors are being caused by the cavern, you know, falling in or salt blocks, you know, falling into the cavern, and that's what's causing the tremors. So, you know, to answer his question, I guess anything's possible, but USGS is telling us that the tremors are being caused, you know, by salt falling in versus activation of the fault line.
Yeah, but are they actually testing it, and does anybody really know?
Some probes down there, and they have 3 or 4 mobile units have been set up around, I guess, the perimeter of the dome, and then Doc Horton has brought in some additional instrumentation, and many of the geologists I've spoken with at the universities here in New Orleans, it's not a real seismically active area, per se.
Right.
But again, anything's possible. I mean, it's not like California where they've got, you know, everything's rigged on the fault lines, you know, and all the instrumentation that Caltech has, for example. They don't have that type of deep-depth resources here in southeast Louisiana, you know, that they have out there in California, because they're much more seismically active out there. However, USGS also works with the Strategic Petroleum Reserves, you know, so they do really have, you know, a handle on in terms of the seismology, or else they wouldn't be storing petroleum, you know, and crude in domes. You know, they really do know, have this all mapped out. I would hope, but we can't, you know, how do you predict how seismically active, you know, an area is that may have been dormant for centuries, you know?
Yeah, and then there was another story that talked about, you know, the storage of chlorine and in the use of, you know, in the use of certain aspects of the petrochemical industry, and then that was what was being stored down there. And, of course, that just sounded a little far-fetched to me, because it just sounds like, you know, they're trying to make it look like the storage of any chemicals down there is not as serious as it would be if it was oil and gas or something to do with
they've been storing crude for years, you know, in the domes. I mean, that's you know, it's the salt dome storage technology. There isn't anything new with regard to that, but what comes into play is when you have these highly pressurized gases in the caverns themselves. And then if there's that type of, you know, fracturing within these domes, the gases will try to, you know, find the path of least resistance and come up through these shallow aquifers. And that's why we're seeing the hydrocarbons, you know, in the dome. So it could quite possibly, I mean, I'm not an expert in any stretch of the imagination. If they're asking all of these 600 companies to vent, there is some issue with regard to some of the gases that are stored in adjacent caverns.
How many people in that general vicinity have been tested as far as tested for their health and if there is, you know, if they're breathing this in, and what are the symptoms that the people have felt, and did these symptoms abate when they were evacuated and moved to other places?
I don't know about particular testing. I mean, I know some people have reported symptoms, have gone to the doctor. not real sure what happened. I know just one particular instance. I remember a lady talking about her child having maybe asthma or some type of breathing problems, and since they've evacuated, it's cleared up. And one of the things we were talking about in the group tonight, you know, the diesel, these brine caverns have a diesel blanket on the top of the brine. I guess it's a way to stop the brine from leaking out. Well, you know, when the from the breach in the cavern, the diesel is in the sinkhole. Now, you know, people keep smelling the diesel, and mostly it stirs up the smell when, you know, cave-ins happen. But they talk about, you know, skin and eye irritation. You know, we were talking about it earlier. They need to, you know, I know it's an unstable area, but they really need to clean all of this diesel up and get it out of there. I don't know what's taking them so long. I mean, it's been 2 months.
Wow. That is just, it just doesn't seem like it's getting any better. Now, what about the people being paid $800 a week for staying in their evacuated areas or wherever they happen to call home after they were, after they had left their own homes? This is what I'm hearing, is that they're paid a little more than $800 a week. They were told that they could go back at one point maybe to gather some belongings. And my question is, did a lot of them go back? Are they collecting the money? Are they staying with friends and family elsewhere? What's their current situation? And about how many people does this include?
Yeah, okay, well, I can pretty much have the numbers by heart. They're getting paid $875 a week. There's 150 households in the evacuated area. It's a mandatory evacuation, not forced. Now, my opinion, it should be forced. I don't think it's safe for anybody to be there. But only approximately 60 households have heeded the evacuation warning. So there's about 90 households that are still living in this evacuated area. And officials are telling them that, it, you know, well, I don't know. I mean, it's mandatory that, you know, they say it's not safe, but, you know, I think a lot of people are under the impression that, you know, that it's somewhat safe to be there. I disagree. You know, I don't think
to the officials that are working this 24/7, John, I don't think that they're being given false assurances that this is a safe location. I mean, they've been given sheets that say you need to sign off when you put your next of kin, you know, if you've decided you're going to stay. And they also, you know, have some systems in place to do texting and calling of the individuals, you know, everyone in the community in case something does break. But I'm in agreement with you, John. It is not a safe place for people to be. And to the water listening audience, please, please, we don't need citizen journalists to go down to Bayou Corn. It's a very dangerous place. And it's changing. It's dynamic. We have gases in the area. It will be venting. So it's not a place for folks to go down with their cameras and their video cameras and document this, because it's an incredibly unsafe situation. It just really is. So it's not something that I would, you know, say to document. You know, with BP, we had a lot of citizen journalists, and they did put their health on the line by going out and being exposed to the air and to the tar balls and to the oil that was impacting the shores. I mean, and people could be put in harm's way if they come down and try to be heroes, you know, in that sense.
Yeah.
Now, the local media, they're going down there pretty regularly, like every day or every couple days. I saw one, I was able to find one recent story on YouTube. I can't remember. Oh, WAFB that had gotten there, and the story was done on the 27th. Is there a lot of the local people going down there, or what's happening with that? The local media, I should say.
Well, I kind of alluded to it earlier. It seems more, you know, they just react when something really happens. You know, they were out and about this past Tuesday, which was the Monday night. Texas Brian sent out a press release at 10:30 at night, and it's what Linda had mentioned. You know, they tried to blame the cavern failure on the seismic activity when USGS says it's just the opposite. You know, it's the cavern failing causing the seismic.
And I was able to find another video done by Dutch Sense. I'm sure you, both of you, are probably aware of Dutch Sense, who does a lot of earth change and weather pattern type videos. He's become pretty much a YouTube sensation. But he did some videos called, one of them was Louisiana Sinkhole Explained. So he's done some coverage, but there is a lot of YouTube coverage, but I don't see a lot of it after August. So it's almost like the story is almost to the point of dying out, when really
the local media has been pretty good, I would say, covering this. From the Advocate, which is the Baton Rouge Daily, have done some incredible investigative journalism that we're very, very proud of. However, the national media just has not glommed on to this. I mean, it is a story that is not going to go away. I mean, it's just too big to go away. And the national media, on a national note, should understand that anytime you have a community that is being ripped apart by such a large environmental disaster like this, it is not a flash in the pan. This is something that this community is going to live with for months, if not years, in terms of disruption. And this has it's just the tip of the iceberg in terms of what else is stored in, domes across Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. And what does that mean to the larger picture of communities and our aquifers? If we've got, and to Dutch's point, and he's a great guy, by the way, and an incredibly inquisitive, smart, sharp, aware person. And if there is any type of seismology that could possibly impact domes across the southeastern Louisiana or even across the Gulf Coast states, within terms of shifting plates and what have you, we need to have more grassroots scientists like Dutch. You know, I'm going to put it out there. I mean, we really need scientists who aren't, bought off, by the BP folks, across the Gulf Coast, to come out and really be independent. We need third-party independent analysis of any type of environmental issue like this. We needed it for BP. We need it now for Bayou Corn. So anything is possible. Anything is possible in terms of what our scientists and our geologists, have at their disposal. We just need to get the right brain trust on this.
Now, we've got just about 5 minutes till the close of the show. I'm going to just throw it out there to each of you. Name me three things that Bayou Corn needs right now. And you go ahead and start, Linda, and then you, John.
Well, I'd like to see a scientific SWAT team from the federal government on this immediately. I'd like to see DNR relieved of their duties. They're complicit, in their oil and gas dependencies, and because there's been some question about, the collusion that they've had with the oil and gas industry and the problems that John outlined, they should be relieved of their duty. And thirdly, I think that the residents need to be communicated in an open, honest, and transparent fashion, and they need to be aware of the health issues that they're being exposed to, and especially those who have not evacuated. They need to understand the health issues and how that may harm their health. Not now, but in the long term. So those would be my three.
Yeah, and, I mean, I would just totally agree with those three. And just to all your listeners, we need the national media. The people have been going through this for 4 months. They've been evacuated for 2 months. The strain on the people, the sadness is unbelievable. Kids crying to go home. Yeah, it's just unbelievable.
Really pretty much what was done during Katrina, this diaspora of people, forced from their homes pretty much and uprooted and culture lost.
A whole community ripped apart, Anita. A whole community ripped apart. And the heritage of Acadiana is in tear apart, you know, that area. I can't stress this strongly enough, that there have been injustices in Louisiana, and those have to be righted. Those justices have to be righted. We cannot relocate an entire community and the heritage of people who spent generations on that bayou and their families. People have to understand that that corporations do not rule in Louisiana. I mean, our people come first. Our people come first.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to thank you, Linda and John. This is Linda Levitt and John O'Shea. Linda Levitt is not living in Louisiana now, but that's her home.
No, actually, I am living in Louisiana.
Hi, you're just.
Yeah, I do live here. I've been in California. I've lived in California, but my home is actually in Louisiana now. And I head up the Gulf Coast Environmental Health Coalition, which is a coalition of grassroots advocates across 5 different states. So before we leave, I'd like to leave a couple of websites for folks to go to. Can I just rattle those off real quickly? Do we have time?
Sure, go ahead.
John and the Bayou Corn Community residents have their own update and information. I encourage everybody to get the local information from them. That's www.lasinkhole.com. Also, the Assumption Parish, they do real-time parish updates, and they have a WordPress and a blog, and you can go to their website, and they just totally revamped that, and thank you that they did that. We're very appreciative of that, and that's AssumptionLA.com/BayouCorn. And then also for independent third-party scientific and environmental analysis, everyone can go to LeanWeb, and that's the Louisiana Environmental Action Network, and they are at LENWEB.org. And just click on Community Public Health, and you'll find Bayou Corn as one of their key topics there. So those are 3 really great sites to get information.
The other parish site is AssumptionLA.wordpress.com.
Okay, that is great. And if you can go to wisewomenmedia.posteris.com, you can probably post all of those at the bottom of the blog post for this show, and that way people can access them later. Or you can email them to me, and I'll post them there, so it doesn't matter either way. I'd like to post them on that blog itself. We're down to almost a minute left, and I wanted to thank both of you for being on the show. I know that this is such a close-to-the-heart issue, since, you know, this part of Louisiana is your home. And I want to encourage everybody to do as much research as you can and viral this out on your social networks, what's happening there. I also want to thank the Here Be Monsters Network for giving us this hour of time every week. And I want to thank Roundtree 7, Daughters of Isis, Hoodooed, Power New Media and Public Relations, Tarot and Stars, Florida Nature Photos, sponsors, and hit us up on the wisewomenmedia.posteris.com at the WePay link to donate. And we will see you next week. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.